Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Aloha. It's Monday, April 11th, 2005, and we're beginning our Phase 2 public hearings on Senate Bill 5505, which is Commission on Children and Family. Begin with an agency overview by Sheila Baker.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will point out in front of you today, you have today's agenda. You have a copy of my memo that got to your office afternoon, so you may not have had a chance to see it yet. But I'll go over that as part of my overview. And then we have materials both from the Budget and Management Division and then the agency, and all those materials will be used later today. What I will work from is this memorandum. No pretty pictures on the front. It's a basic memorandum dated April 8th. And as you may recall, in the Phase 2 hearings, the role of the Legislative Fiscal Office is basically just to set the groundwork, refresh your memories as to what the agency does and some of the issues that you'll be looking at as you're dealing with their budget. So the first part of the memo describes the agency mission. This is just a recap of what they presented to us in Phase 1. The Oregon Commission on Children and Families is a partnership of citizens and professionals working together to improve the lives of children and families in Oregon's local communities. The Oregon Commission on Children and Families facilitates and supports local coordinated comprehensive planning for all children and families, promotes system integration, and provides leadership for local and state efforts focused on early childhood. Then our next point of emphasis is who are the primary programs and customers of this agency. And I like to think of the commission as having two primary types of programs. The first is what I would consider to be sort of an untraditional state program, in that there are a number of funding streams that go to local commission and families and efforts that the state commission provides to support local commissions on children and families for local community development and then local programs and services. So neither the state commission nor the local commissions deliver services directly, but they are the catalyst, if you will, for those programs and services. And the commission's immediate customers are local commissions, but as a network of local commissions, they serve children and families across the state. And then the state commission also administers what I consider to be more traditional programs for a state agency, and that would include the Healthy Start Home Visitation Program, court-appointed special advocate programs, and relief nurseries. And so those programs, those dollars, are specified for certain uses and certain sites. So the state commission's customers include, of course, the 36 local commissions, other partners at the community and at the state level, both public and private, certain program populations that are targeted, and then children and families statewide. Major policy and budget issues. The first one, I think, I've tried to encapsulate sort of the dynamics of this commission. It's a balance of community-based decision-making with flexible funds. So the funding goes out to the local commissions, and the local commissions, within certain parameters, decide what to do with that. And then there are targeted funds with more specific program parameters, as identified below, above the Healthy Start programs, court-appointed special advocates, and relief nurseries. The whole system has been developing over time. So it's been considerable discussion of who does what when, how does that tie into what the statutory charge is, do we change statute, do we not change statute regarding this, what are the roles and functions of the various partners. And there are numerous discussions going on about a different role for either the state or local commissions, different kinds of program dollars. All of that discussion is not just a budget discussion, it's a broader discussion in terms of the whole system and whatever legislation would need to be put in place to implement that. And I just noted that in terms of significant differences in how the programs or services are delivered or what those programs or services are, we would expect that there would need to be some lead time for that, meaning that if you want to make a significant change in the structure of the programs of the agency, it's it's unlikely that you could do that in the budget and expect July 1, everybody turns on a dime. So I just wanted to highlight that as well. And then the other major policy and budget issue I wanted to highlight was the transfer of the juvenile crime prevention grants and related federal funding for juvenile crime prevention. The governor's budget shifts that from the Criminal Justice Commission, where it's been for the last several biennia, to the State Commission on Children and Families. On page 2 of the memo, I've identified budget notes, emergency board actions, and audit findings specific to this agency. There was one budget report from last session, and that related to the resource developer position. That was a new position in the last budget set up to generate other funds to cover it to cover its costs and provide additional resources for the commission. And so the budget note requires the commission to report on the effectiveness of that position. And we'll hear more detail on that as we get into the budget, because there is a proposal in the budget to make that limited duration position this biennium a permanent position for next biennium. In January of 2004, the commission requested and the emergency board approved $205,000 of federal expenditure limitation. This is related to a positive youth development grant. That continues into the next biennium, and you'll also see a proposal in the budget to shift a current limited duration position for that grant to a permanent position funded by that grant. And then the third bullet there refers to Secretary of State's Audit Division reviews. They're in the middle of two reviews for the commission right now, a change of director review from when the director left in the middle of this current biennium, and then what they call an expenditure resource management audit. And at this point, there aren't any findings or anything that available that I can discuss with you, but both reports are supposed to be done sometime later this month. That's the schedule that the Secretary of State was on. So we hope to have some information before we go into work session for this commission.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilmona Sanderson.
Thank you. Ms. Baker, what about how long is the grant, this positive youth development grant? And is it normally a policy to ask for a permanent position for grants that may not last forever?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, I believe this grant is a five-year grant, and so it would continue this biennium and then into the next biennium and then into 07-09. The decision on whether to add a permanent position versus a limited duration one is sort of on a case-by-case basis. What's the time period of the current grant? Also, is there a possibility that the grant could be extended in the future? Arguably, in terms of budget building, when the funding for the grant goes away, then the position would go away as well. We would look for that in future biennium as they're building their budget.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Okay.
Senator
Wesson. What's the latest from Kathy? I mean, do you think she's going to get this audit out, particularly the expenditure and resource management audit out in April? Is that realistic? Or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wesson, this is what they are showing as the current schedule, so to be done in April. I haven't talked to them. I had tried to contact them late last week, but hadn't heard back yet. In terms of revenue sources for the agency, I just wanted to highlight that most of the commission's budget is general fund. Some of that general fund is used to match federal maintenance of effort for temporary assistance to needy family funds that the Department of Human Services receives. 30% of their budget we call other funds, because budgetarily it's federal money that comes from Department of Human Services, but it's treated as other funds in this agency's budget. And I've noted the sources there. The primary ones, Social Services Block Grant, a Safe and Stable Families, also known as Family Preservation and Support Funds, and then Child Care and Development Funds. So they get federal funds through Department of Human Services and also from Employment Department. And then the federal funds that are recognized as federal funds in this budget are primarily attached to the juvenile crime prevention funds being transferred in the budget from the Criminal Justice Commission. Those monies come from the U.S. Department of Justice. I've put three bullets down here for the governor's recommended budget, what I see as the highlights. Basically, the governor's recommended budget maintains the current system in terms of flexible local grants and then targeted programs. There are, however, some general fund program reductions and some staffing reductions. It also transfers the juvenile crime prevention money from the Criminal Justice Commission, as we've talked about. And then it adds permanent positions to replace some limited duration positions, again, as I've noted above. And then it adds two other positions that are paid for by other agencies to support the Community Schools Initiative, which this legislature passed previously, and the Partners for Children and Families Work Group. And again, we'll get into more detail as we're talking about the budget. I attached to the memo a chart that shows what I think is significant in terms of what's happened to this budget over time. I started with the 01-03 adopted budget because I see that as sort of the high point of funding before we got into the significant budget constraints of the recession. So it shows the 2001-03 adopted budget, a total of over 83 million total funds. It shows what happened during the 01-03 biennium after or during the recession when the special session actions made significant reductions, and then the defeat of Measure 28 in the spring of 03. Then I showed the 2003-05 adopted budget, 72 million total funds, because that was the last time that this legislature was in session. Then, with the defeat of Measure 28, there were further reductions, which is reflected in the 2003-2005 approved column.
Measure 30?
Measure 30, yes, the defeat of Measure 30 and the reductions that were associated with that. And so, from 67.8 million total funds currently in their approved budget, the governor's budget grows to 76.6 million total funds. I would note that, again, a significant part of that is the juvenile crime prevention dollars. And if you take out the transfer of the juvenile crime prevention funds, the commission's budget is actually slightly below where it was or where it is in the current biennium.
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Senison.
Or Mr. Chair. Ms. Baker. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In some counties, and I don't know if all counties, at least in the Healthy Start program, they get money, they have targeted case management, and they get federal funds. I mean, they get money for federal funds. But I don't see federal funds a part of any of these budgets, and I know they've been doing that for a number of years. Where is that then, and how much is that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, because of the way that the budget is structured and because the Department of Human Services is the Medicaid agency for the state, in fact, the Medicaid match from the locals for the Healthy Start program shows up as other funds in this agency's budget.
In this agency.
In this
okay.
agency.
Thank you.
So it's part of the other funds. It's about $3 million, I believe, for 05-07 is the expected amount of match on that.
Thank you.
Questions? Right. As we begin today, I see that we have Representative Gene Wisnat here. Would you prefer to speak now?
Yes, sir.
Why don't we go ahead and do that? I know you have other committee responsibilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Richardson and committee members. For the record, I am Representative Gene Wisnat, District 53, which is Deschutes County. But I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House Senate Bill 5505. Chair and committee members, I testified in support of this bill 2 years ago as a member of the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families. and I come back today to testify in support of this bill as still a member of the Schuetz County Commission on Children.
Well, that prior statement is equally true, Mr.
As a member of the Schuetz County Commission on Children and Families and one of your colleagues. It's been my honor and pleasure to serve on the Schuetz County Commission for Children and Families for 6 years. I served as vice chair for a year and chair 2 years. We do some great things for the community. And I've also had a great relationship with the state. I'm here to also ask your support and continued support of the state commission. I think we need the state here in Salem to bring all the counties together, help us work on our projects, and provide the central leadership. The Commission on Children and Families in Oregon are a national example of success and prevention. You know, I can give you figures. I cannot, normally it's $1 spent for prevention is going to save you $7 in the long term. Last week we were hearing testimony in public safety from the Oregon Youth Authority about if you support our program, we're going to save you money because the kids won't wind up in prison. Well, I'm here to tell you, if you support Commission on Children and Families, hopefully they're not going to wind up in the Oregon Youth Authority, because that's what this program is all about, is prevention, early prevention, and we also have treatment in other programs too, but we emphasize early prevention, and we've been very successful. Also, your Commission on Children and Families at the state level and within the counties have led the way, and we called it best practices. Now we call it performance measurements and outcomes, but we've been doing that with our programs in the Commission for Children and Family for years, being sure that you're getting good results from your dollars that you invest in these programs. So I think that's the main thing I wanted to tell you, that I, from my personal experience on the Commission for Children and Families, that we need this. It does help our state. It helps our children and families, and also to support continuation of the state commission, and also to transfer those funds from the into the Commission for Children and Family from juvenile prevention money. So I thank you again for the honor to testify. I'm sure that you'll do the right thing, and hope you can fund this to the maximum extent possible. Do you have any questions, Mr. Chair or committee members?
Any questions?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
I just can't help but comment on Gene's Representative Wisnett's leadership in Deschutes County on the commission. I mean, he is one of the most heartfelt, passionate, articulate advocates for the noble and worthy work that the commissions do, and in particular and specifically Deschutes County, where you exemplify great leadership. And I know everyone behind the dais and everyone in the room appreciates your leadership, Gene. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and Senator Weston, thank you for this comment. It's We in Deschutes County, we think we have the best, but they're all good, and all the counties are important, and it's been an honor to serve. We've got great community support, and we've always had support by our leadership in Salem from Senator Westland and Senator Clarno have all been active supporters of our Commission on Children and Families at the state level and the county level.
Thank you very much.
We know we have the best districts. It's arguable whether we have the best commission.
Thank you, Representative, wasn't it?
Chair.
Senator Moss Anderson.
We have a Representative Boone and Representative Tomei in the back, and I didn't know if they wanted to make comment or not.
Good morning. Did you also wish to testify?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're in another committee just a couple doors away, so we appreciate you taking the time to let us speak.
Thank you.
Let Representative Boone go first.
For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, which is the upper left coast, Clatsop, Tillamook, Western Washington County, and Columbia. And I just want to say a few words in support of the Children and Families Services Commission and what great work they do at the local level, and we depend on them so heavily in my counties and my district. And I can't say enough good about them. I know you're going to hear a lot more about them, but whatever you do, keep them. Give them more money if you have to. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41, which is Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. I want to echo what Representative Boone just said. And as some of you know, I'm a psychiatric social worker, and I've worked all my professional life with children and families. And I've been so impressed with the work that the commission has done all these years. And as Representative Monis Anderson knows, both of us were on the Health and Human Services Committee for two terms, and this is my third term, and we're meeting two doors away. And as we heard from other people from throughout the state who were talking about the commission, there was nothing but praise. So I hope again that you will be supporting the commission, and I would applaud, as Representative Boone suggested, giving them more money. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And
thank
I would just like to apologize to the people who are already waiting, in addition, for letting us come first, because we have two bills today that were our additional help for mental health and issues that the Children and Families Commission works on, too. And we appreciate you letting us just step in front of people, so we'll leave now. Thank you.
Thank you for
Thank
taking
you.
The time to come over.
Thank you.
Were you in Deschutes County this weekend, Representative Boone?
Sorry?
Were you in Deschutes County this weekend?
I was in Bend. Sisters, Redmond, Pineville, all over the place, all the way over to Baker City. Went through your county. Sorry, I missed your dinner.
It's okay. We had some police reports. Remember those police reports? I'm just wondering. Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Legally, I hope. All right. Are there any other legislators that need to be prioritized here? If not, then we'd like to invite Linda Ames for Department of Administrative Services to come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Linda Ames with Budget and Management Division, and I'm going to go through this handout. Sheila really covered this quite masterfully in her overview, I think. So I'll go through it rather quickly and leave as much time as I can for the commission and other speakers. The point is to really give you that high-level context so that as you hear the details from the agency, you sort of know where to put the pieces together. Page 2, the whole Human Services Program area chart that you've seen before, just a reminder, in the big picture, the Commission on Children and Families is really tiny at their $76 million total funds. DHS is definitely the big player in this program area. Page 3, the Governor's Principles Budget. I really just want to highlight this agency's budget is closely related to three different principles: education, basic needs, and public safety. And I think that really serves to highlight the unique nature of prevention programs, how they ultimately affect many aspects of the state's system of services. Page 4, the various fund types, I think Sheila covered. If you go on to page 5, you do see the budget categories in this budget. Again, most of the budget goes out as special payments out to local commissions and direct program services. About 5% of the budget is for professional services, salaries, and benefits for state commission staff, and another 6% for services and supplies and contracts. Page 6 gives you a little bit more of the historic budget picture, pretty much the same thing Sheila showed you graphically. If you just focus on general funds, you see they started out at the beginning of 2003 at about $61 million. At that point, there was a plan to phase in Healthy Start to serve 80% of first birth families, although the phase-in would be over the entire biennium, so it didn't reflect the full cost of that service level. By the time we finished 2003, we were down to $51 million of general fund, with cuts pretty much in all the programs. And then, as you see, moving on to 2003-05, those cuts were carried forward into the current biennium, and then when ballot measure 30 failed, there were further reductions. So that put the budget down to under $44 million. That's about a 29% reduction from where we thought we'd be at when we started into 2003. And in terms of staffing, the cut was about the same, a little over 30% in the state staffing levels. I have added that fourth column so that you can see what happened to the agency's programs before we moved in the juvenile crime prevention dollars, since that isn't really new money, but just rearranged. So you see, in general fund, there's just a small reduction, about 1%, compared to the 03-05 budget. And that's, at that point, the federal funds in this budget, the $490,000, is just the Positive Youth Development Grant that's ongoing. And then finally, in the governor's budget, you do see this 13% increase, moving the juvenile crime prevention dollars in, and about $3 million of federal funds come along with the juvenile crime prevention. Page 7 just highlights on the major policy issues in the governor's budget. The governor's budget really maintains Oregon's core prevention system. A major policy issue in this budget is the transfer of these juvenile crime prevention funds. The governor's focus in this transfer was to consolidate prevention dollars, making them more effective and administratively efficient. The governor's office had a number of discussions around where the best home for these dollars was, and ultimately they believed the commission was the best rather than Oregon Youth Authority, because it clearly focused the dollars on prevention and on ways to intervene with youth before they enter the juvenile justice system. There are some reductions in the governor's budget, and this is up compared to the current program level, about $1 million in these locally invested grant streams out to local commissions, $250,000 in crisis nurseries, and about $137,000 in commission staff and support services. And finally, on page 8, the investments in the governor's budget. The governor did maintain Healthy Start at its current program level, 45% to 47%, which is about where we're at now, in all 36 counties. And then there are some staffing changes that Sheila talked about. Three different positions that are currently in their budget as limited duration are made permanent. Remember the way that we budget at the state. If you have a limited duration position, it automatically goes away at the end of the biennium, and if you want to continue it, you need to take a specific action. So all the formal numbers automatically subtract those positions. And then there is one new position in a policy package to support the community schools initiative. And I know the agency is going to be getting into a little more detail in some of those pieces.
Okay, thank you. Questions? I think that takes care of it. Thank you. It was very clear. Invite Mickey Lansing, Commission, Children and Families. And actually, what we'll do is give you some latitude in the presentation today, and we want to just let everyone know that this is a two-day hearing, and the majority of the public testimony will take place tomorrow. And so... I hope that everyone understood that before they got here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mickey Lansing. I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. And thank you, Chair Richardson, for having some latitude, because to my right, I have someone who, in fact, has come more than 100 miles today to testify, and that is County Commissioner Ben Boswell from Wallowa County. And he needs to go to a meeting at the Association of Oregon Counties, but wanted to make sure that he could say something on behalf of the commission system prior to leaving. So if that's all right with you, I would like to turn it over to Commissioner Boswell.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Ben Boswell. I live in Lawstein, Oregon, Wallowa County Commissioner. I'm a co-chair of the Local Government Advisory Committee to the Department of Human Services and a vice president of the Association of Oregon Counties. I come before the committee today to strongly advocate that you support the commission in with the governor's requested budget as a minimum, and come to share just a little bit of how effective I think that the commission system is. I've been around 12 years during which the current commission system was implemented, and I find that it's very effective in our community and others as well, but I know best about ours. The comprehensive planning process that identifies the priority needs of a community prepares best practice strategies to meet those needs, and then through the use of leverage funding and just encouragement brings these strategies to bear on the needs in the community and solves problems. In Wallowa County, our experience is with the Oregon benchmarks. We rank 35th in the state in terms of our economy, but we're third in the welfare of children, third lowest crime rate, and we have the number one education indicators in the state. We think that's because we have used this strategy to focus on early intervention. We had a home visitation program before Healthy Start, and it continues to work. It even is manifest in visits by our library program to child care providers with free story time and free books for children. So early literacy is a very key focus. We think it paid off. We think that the assessment process in the commission guarantees that money spent by the commission and leveraging other resources is well spent, and trying to respond to the legislative additions to the commission system. House Bill 2004 was Senate Bill 555, and Senate Bill 2 is 67 or 76. I'm dyslexic on that. I think the commission system has responded admirably in trying to implement those legislative additions. We obviously feel very fortunate that the state has maintained the local commission capacity, because that's where the work happens, and yet we look to the state commission time and again for technical assistance, for policy direction, and for funding. Unless you think it's all about funding, I'm here to tell you that it's not. It's more about collaboration. It's more about strategizing. It's more about getting the job done on the ground in the communities. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I wholeheartedly support the commission's work and urge your support as well.
Thank you. Questions for Commissioner Boswell? Representative Henson.
Well, I just more of a comment. As someone who faced with the choice of either testifying before this committee or going to an AOC meeting decides to do both, I think that
speaks
well. Commitment. It's questionable, but questionable judgment, but incredible commitment. That's a long ways to come to do both of those things, but I certainly sense what the importance of it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I am going to ever so briefly go back to phase one and just review the commission system. We have brought our chart again today. And so if you want to go back to what it is that we do locally, we look at existing community supports. We map those, the strengths, the gaps, the barriers that exist in the community, and then that second line of green are the kinds of things that we use as the commission system to fill the gaps in those communities, to make sure that we have along the continuum 0 to 18 years that web of supports. If, in fact, kids don't get what they need at that particular level, then we go into what we call the more intensive prevention systems, which is Healthy Start Intensive Services, Relief Nurseries, Court-Appointed Special Advocates. What you don't have there, but what you have on your yellow sheet, is also Juvenile Crime Prevention Services, and then other kinds of targeted prevention services. And the hope is if kids get to that level, we can help them in a way that gets them back on track and they are back in just those community supports. However, if that does not occur, then those kids are subject to committing crimes, they have mental illnesses, they have alcohol and drug abuse, unemployment issues for dropping out of school, poor health, and of course many live in poverty. Those are the kinds of things that the local commissions do. We've talked a lot about the local commission. We haven't talked as much about the state commission's role. But first of all, let's go back to who we are as a system. We basically do three things. We do prevention with a focus on child abuse prevention. We help communities help themselves. We engage communities and we leverage and sustain funds in the community by engaging community members and their investment in that community. Preventing child abuse, study after study, shows that intervention with at-risk families gets us the highest return on our investment. One of the keys to our success is in helping communities help themselves is the outcomes that we get in identifying our local concerns, and then, as Representative Witness said, is developing solutions within that community as to how we're going to approach that. And then the third thing we do, which we think is one of our greatest successes, is that we leverage additional resources. And by involving the community, you not only get the leverage resources, but you get community buy-in to sustain those programs. When you hear from Relief Nurseries tomorrow, you're going to hear about their leverage, at least 5-1, but that is a community-generated program, and that program is going to continue because the community supports that program. We have leveraged over $33 million worth of funds in the last 2 years, and that's almost 75% of our general fund budget. So, and if I can just toot our horn a little bit, we don't do this often, but our commission system, state and local together, is looked upon nationally as a model for how it is you support communities in delivering services to their kids and their families. We've had inquiries from Missouri, from Maine, from New Jersey, from Texas, and from New Mexico, to name a few. And internationally as well, from New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and Japan. We even had a person from New Zealand come and visit us and decide to do her master's degree at MIT, and she did it on the whole system of collaboration and what it is we do here in Oregon. So we want you to know that prevention is absolutely essential. Nothing is more important than protecting our children and starting at an early age. Every day kids arrive at school, they've been yelled at, they've been hit, some have been burned by cigarettes, they're hungry, and some have moved from place to place. How are these children actually going to be prepared to learn what it is they're being taught if, in fact, they come from those kinds of circumstances? Even the best teachers are not able to undo the damage that has been done to these children. And these are the same children that 10 to 12 years from now are going to be committing crimes. They're going to be addicted to alcohol and drugs. They're going to have mental illnesses. They're going to be depressed. They're going to get pregnant. And they're going to drop out of school. And in some cases, they're going to enter the services of Oregon Youth Authority. Much more expensive services than had we had done something on the front end of the system. And I want to be real clear about this. The commission isn't only about early childhood, but the commission is about preventing children and youth from getting further into the system where it's much more costly all along the continuum. So even if you start at Healthy Start and you end up with youth investment for kids acting out, teenagers, for juvenile crime prevention, essential supports to ensure the kids don't drop out of school, and the kids even who go to OYA to ensure that they have aftercare services in their community. This is what we're about. And the state commission has a unique role in this. We, in essence, act as an insulator to the understandable pressure that faces every community to deal with the immediate problems, those immediate crises that are here today, instead of spending money on prevention for the future. Without a state commission and the accountability that it represents, those pressures can be irresistible. The abstract idea of prevention for tomorrow will inevitably succumb to the pressure to solve today's crisis today. Without clear, measured, and enforced standards, prevention money can be diverted to many other uses. So, those are our opening statements. I will now go. Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we're going through kind of the overview, and this is just for kind of the edification of maybe people that will be testifying, that, and this is my personal point. Because of phase one, I think most of us are pretty aware both of what the commission does, the importance of the prevention programs. One of the things that I would really like to get out of phase two is the differences between how your program will be able to perform and function between the governor's budget and the two co-chairs' budgets. And if different program elements that are either being discussed at being removed or included, I'd like to see how those are going to fit, or what will be lost if they go away. So I don't want you to change what you're saying now, but as kind of an overview for this member of the committee over the next 2 days, those are the elements that I'm going to really, really be interested in hearing from.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moss-Anderson.
Yes, and I just want to reiterate that. We know how good the local commissions are. I understand how valuable they are in coordinating the efforts, but I truly want, we are looking at efficiencies. And the commission, in my view, has been so important in building the local commissions. And in so many, in most of our counties, the local commissions are very well established, and they are running very well. What we need to look at is, all right, what is the role of the state commission? How does that fit in, both from the governor's budget as well as the co-chair's budgets? And that is what's critical, because DHS does have prevention, a whole lot of prevention. There, we need to be looking at efficiencies, coordinating. Can it be done differently? Maybe it can't, but we really need to understand from your point of view, you know, how you feel you could not make the changes that are in the co-chair's budget.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm just going to, we've been asked to sort of follow an outline, and so just stop me whenever you need to ask a question, and I will try to incorporate at some point some of those questions, or if you want to ask them of me at that particular time, just go ahead and do so.
What is it that you're trying to accomplish in the next half hour or an hour?
We are trying to go through what's happened with the commission budget between 01, 03, and 03, 05, the differences in that. So the major budgetary changes, you each have one of these. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to sort of flip through that as quickly as possible.
What I'm trying to do is understand what the goal is. I mean, it's not to help us understand, I mean, it's not just to reiterate what we've already heard before. Is it to see the impact of changes on the programs? I mean, what is the goal that you want us to walk away with at the end of this meeting?
Mr. Chair, at the end of this meeting, we do want you to walk away with having an understanding of the impact of this particular budget. We, in terms of the co-chair's budget, and I'm going to need help from Linda Ames and Sheila Baker on that particular issue, is that we have not talked a lot about what would that impact really be. In the Senate co-chair's budget, you've got $22 million going away, you've got block grants going out to counties, and you've got the elimination of the state commission. In the House budget, it is entirely the opposite. as I understand that to be. Now, if I don't understand everything, please let me know what else. If you are asking me, do you want to know what the state commission or what the commission system will look like if, in fact, the state commission was eliminated, that certain programs went to the Department of Human Services, I can give you my best guess, but I'm not even sure about that detail.
Okay. One thing that we brought up before, and that is we have a concern with the fact that there's 8 to 12 programs that if you just read what their goals are, seem to have quite a bit of overlap. And yet we are assured that there's no overlap with them, that they each have their own goals and that they coordinate. And certainly we do know this, that they all have their own constituencies. And so we're wondering if you'll also be dealing with the comparison or contrast, help us understand how do we make sense out of the fact that we have multiple programs that are treating the same basic population.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, you're going to get an opportunity today to hear from the Commission, from the Department of Human Services, from Oregon Health Sciences University, and the Oregon Department of Education about, I think, those programs you were talking about. All the starts, the healthy start, the even start, the great, not as much great start. I'll talk about that. We've already talked about that. But Head Start, early Head Start, early intervention. We are going to come before you before the end of today and talk about what each of those programs do, how they connect with one another, and the fact that we are not duplicating services.
Okay, thank you.
Is that helpful?
It is. I just want to make sure we don't just cover time, but that we're actually working toward a goal that will help us to determine a budget.
Okay. And so what we have been asked to do is follow this outline that you have in your particular PowerPoint. Is that okay?
Fine.
All right. Let's move through. So between 03 and 05 bienniums, Healthy Start expanded from 10 counties to 36. Remember, in 01, the Oregon Children's Plan rolled out, Healthy Start rolled out to all 36 counties. Funding was supposed to go to, it was at 60%, was supposed to go to 80% of first births as of January of 03. Remember, we had six special sessions. Then we had the regular legislative session. When we ended, Healthy Start was at 65% of first births. But then we had ballot measure 30, which was, I believe, in February of 04. At that point, Healthy Start was reduced to 47% of first births. Our locally invested grant streams. These are, in actuality, what we call our block grants. 100% are passed through to counties. Our local investments were reduced by 32%. I'm just going to keep moving here. The major budgetary changes that occurred, again, between last biennium and this biennium, is that 32% of the state staff were reduced. So we had 34.5 FTE down to 23.5. We had a 29% overall general fund reduction. And there was, and I think this is of special note, a 71% reduction in the juvenile crime prevention funds. They went from $17 million to $5 million in the last session. So as a result of that, there was a reduced capacity to provide services. Healthy Start provided less services to intensive families. Relief nurseries, their wait lists continue to increase. And then community prevention and intervention programs. Again, while we don't provide direct services, those dollars go out to local programs along the age and intensity continuum, and especially juvenile crime, they were all reduced, and there was a reduction in state commission support to local communities. Also in that time frame, funding for family resources, community learning centers. These are wraparound services, many times located within a school and most times linked to the school. So other social support services for kids, that was completely eliminated. The First Step program, which is a violence prevention program for 5- and 6-year-olds in the schools. Wonderful success out of University of Oregon, Dr. Hill Walker. And then Together for Children, we had three state programs. Yes.
Where's Hannah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mickey, when you talk about the 11 FTE reduction from 0103 to the 0305, that's with the state commission. Can you tell us what may have happened at the county level with the local commissions? Did they see a like reduction in staffing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, overall, locally, if you look at the 29% overall general fund reduction, many counties, and I can't tell you exactly how many FTE, but remember, most counties only have two FTE. Now we have many counties that only have one FTE, and they've had to ask for a waiver. So I can't tell you an exact amount, but they were reduced also.
Thank you.
We tried to, however, though, keep hold the counties as harmless as possible. We took the greatest staff reduction at the state level. And now, major budget drivers and environmental factors. What's happening? The economy, unemployment. We know that we found ourselves in 0103 in a dire fiscal environment. We know that methamphetamine has contributed greatly to many of the problems we're seeing today. In Marion County, the Sheriff Raul Ramirez will say that 75 to 90% of their arrests today have to do with methamphetamine. K through 12 funding and the No Child Left Behind policy that asks the kids be ready to not only enter school, but they're able to stay in school and certain standards are met. And then, of course, the reductions in federal, state, local, and nonprofit human services. No one has been without the challenges of meeting this fiscal environment. What are some of the other things that are happening? We call it streamlining. Senate Bill 555, Partners for Children and Families. It is our role at the state level to convene those other state agencies, those partners, again, so that we can streamline the way we do things as agencies together. Public-private partnerships. It's no more important than it is today to have the support of the private sector. And then, of course, the importance to Oregon taxpayers of a cost-effective and quality system of supports for kids and their families. Taxpayers want to know that when they spend money on government services, they're going to get results, as you know. Some other major budget drivers. Research and accountability. Evidence-based practices, as Ben said, Senate Bill 267. Five of our agencies are working very hard to make sure that everything that's funded is based upon evidence-based practice. Increased data on the value and cost effectiveness of prevention. We know that if we spend early, that we are going to get a greater return on our investment. There's compelling research on early childhood development. I'm not going to go through all of those things. And there's also an increasing cost of treatment for kids and their families. I'm now going to ask Michael Kurtz of our staff to talk a little bit about our performance measures.
Good morning, Chairman Richardson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Kurtz, and I'm a Policy and Program Services Supervisor for the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. I've been asked today to come and talk about the three performance measures that we have been mandated to report on. And the first performance measure is in relation to the Healthy Start program. And that performance measure is a comparison between the rate of child maltreatment for children ages 0 to 2 participating in Healthy Start and those in the general population that have not had Healthy Start services. So the number for the percentage of children in the non-served population that were free of maltreatment is 98%. So in other words, that is a rate of 20 per 1,000. Thus, 2% becomes a big picture. So while there are many other positive outcomes that result from the Healthy Start program, as it relates to this single performance measure, we are looking at what impact Healthy Start has on this 2%, this 20 confirmed substantiated reports of maltreatment per 1,000. And this 2% was significant enough in long-term costs to society that you and the legislator have made Healthy Start's impact on it a key performance measure. So the impact that Healthy Start has had on this rate of 20 per 1,000 is that it drops nearly in half to 12 per 1,000 for those that have received the Healthy Start services, regardless of family risk characteristics. So if you look at this over the last 3 years, this would equate to 540 cases of child maltreatment that Healthy Start has prevented. And as Representative Jean Wisnett talked about earlier, the prevention of child abuse has significant long-term cost savings to society associated with it.
Can you take a moment and give us a little bit more in depth on how you came up with 500 in some cases? What is the number? We're dealing with first births only, right?
That is correct.
So how many first births are there?
The number came from the rate of children that were served. So if there is a 12 per 1,000 reduction in child maltreatment rates, equated over the last 3 years, you multiply that by the number of children that were served by Healthy Start, that would come out to 540.
Okay. When we were in phase one, I believe that we were told it was, I thought it was 20 per 1,000, it went down to 8 per 1,000.
What you're looking at here is you're mixing up the rate per 1,000 and the percentage reduction. It went from a 98% of the children that were free from maltreatment in the general population to 98.8% in the population that was served by Healthy Start. So in other words, again, this key performance measure is asking for what impact Healthy Start has had on that 2% of the population that has not been free from child maltreatment. So that becomes then the big picture. That becomes pulled out. And what Healthy Start has done is taken that rate of 20 per 1,000 and reduced that to 12 per 1,000.
Okay. And so I guess what I'm trying to do is equate the conclusion that you drew with the conclusion that you would draw if you took the 8 per 1,000 reduction times the number of firstborn children to determine how what the actual reduction was in hard numbers.
Okay. We have our Healthy Start coordinator here that can probably give a better answer on where that 540 number came from.
Is this performance measure one?
Thank you, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. I'm Karen Van Tassel, the Healthy Start Coordinator with the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. And let's kind of walk through this again, maybe in a little bit different words. In Oregon, in the year 2003 through 2004, the most recent year we have statistics, there were 18,686 first births. Now, when we talk about the statistics around child abuse and neglect, what we are comparing here are Healthy Start children, families, children of families at all risk levels who were touched by Healthy Start, and children ages 0 to 2, versus the overall Oregon population of 0 to 2-year-olds. So that's the two comparative groups. So the Healthy Start children were free from abuse 98.8%, whereas the general population of 0 to 2-year-olds were 98% free from abuse, as Michael said. So then we get to translating that into numbers per 1,000, and we get to that 20 per 1,000 that were abused in the non-Healthy Start group versus the 12 per 1,000 for Healthy Start. So then what Michael did with the 540 was he took a number for 1 year, I believe, and multiplied it by three, and he was giving you a three-year figure. So I see you all calculating up there, and I'm not writing numbers myself, but are you getting to a place where it's making sense?
If it's a three-year...
Yeah. And we can get you some calculations later to confirm how we came up with these numbers.
If that would be helpful.
Would that be helpful,
Mr. Chair? I think what's missing in the calculation is the number of Healthy Start families served, because what you need to compare is the number of families receiving the Healthy Start services. You need to put that into the equation to get to the 540 families.
Okay. Let me just confirm with my evaluator for 1 second.
Right. You know, I don't want to get buried in the minutiae.
What
I'm doing is when I hear numbers that are different, now I've got a concern about what the numbers are, and so I want to see if we're just throwing numbers out or if there is just a different calculation, and so the numbers that I was hearing were not the same as I heard a month and a half ago.
That's true.
That's all.
Chair Richardson, we will see that you get the numbers. We do have the correct numbers. If we haven't made the connections, we will see that you get them.
Thank you. We can move on.
All right. And Chair Richardson, I would like to finish out the performance measures, and then I would actually like to eliminate the rest of the presentation and go directly to the question that Representative Hansen asked about the effects on the commission system of the co-chair's budget, if that's all right with you.
Well,
do you want to finish?
How long will that take? Because I want comparison among various programs. I mean, I don't want that to dominate the rest of the time that we have. So,
Chair Richardson, I will do whatever you would like us to do.
I appreciate that. I'm looking at an agenda that we had for the day, and the agenda we had was very important, as is the question. To answer that question without prior preparation might be more challenging than if you were to come back tomorrow and take some time on that, having had some time to spend on that presentation.
Thank you, Chair Richardson.
But I certainly will give you flexibility on the time, but I just want to make sure that we do deal with a very important issue that keeps coming up, and that is with so many programs focused on primarily prenatal, postpartum, and early childhood, how do we sift through the question as to whether or not all of them need to have management, all of them need to be in existence, all of them are coordinated. Those are it's a very big question that goes across beyond this committee.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator,
and just along those lines, what we are looking, at least from the Senate's co-chair budget, we would like more money to be going to the local commissions, get their staff back up. So we need to look, do they need as much management at the state commission? And so when you're preparing for tomorrow, I mean, that's what we're looking at. Okay.
Please continue.
Okay, I'll continue. I don't know if there was any further questions about the Healthy Start performance measure, but I just wanted to emphasize that this key performance measure is asking us to take a look at one particular outcome of Healthy Start, and that there are many other benefits and positive outcomes of the Healthy Start program as well.
Do we have questions on the performance measures? You know what? We don't have questions on performance measures, so we could actually save you some time.
Chair Richardson, so would you like us to end at this point on performance measures?
Why don't we do that?
Thank you. We will. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good job.
Boy, did you get off easy.
Chair Richardson, I only spent 3 days preparing on these performance measures, so I am a little disappointed that I don't get to speak on them.
I remember being in a trial where this guy, the attorney, had prepared so well for this hearing, and he was going to give his presentation no matter what, and the judge finally said, do you want to continue talking before I change my mind about ruling in your favor? Which he said, no, Your Honor. So I think it'd probably be good for us to move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, members of the committee. The next piece, then, I am just going to go through this, and you stop me wherever you have a question and ask me whatever you'd like. So, again, major budget drivers, local decision-making. Local commissions and local communities need good data, which we provide to them, in many cases from the state, to make good decisions at the local level. They need the flexibility along the continuum. And that's both the age and the intensity continuum. And then they need to have good data for local program performance. The way the local commissions work with their local providers is that they literally sit down and look at a particular program, what is the outcome you want to get, and they negotiate in terms of what do you believe you can do and how can you get success in this particular program. Cost unique to the agency. The staffing of Partners for Children and Families. What that group is trying to do is we're trying to streamline government. We're trying to break down barriers. That's barriers at the state level that keep local people from doing what it is they need to do, at least in a more not only efficient but effective manner. And it maximizes our resources. One of the things that we've done in the last 8 months is that we have created, through our work with Partners for Children and Families, an interagency memo with the Office of Family Health. And you're going to learn more about our relationship in a few minutes, Chair Richardson. But it's for the first time we were able to sit down and say, what does Healthy Start do? What does Babies First do? What does Cocoon do? How do they fit together? Do they duplicate? Are they an overlap in services? So this is something through that streamlining work we have done. We analyze data and we do research. All the data from local communities that come in, the State Commission analyzes that, and then we put that data together and we use that data, again, to make good decisions about policy and about budget. We are working on a shared data collection system that will be much more helpful to local people as they report to us on what's happening. And then we try and align service delivery. This is a more difficult challenge in that how do you have several agencies who come together around a common goal, look at their resources, and how do you align the delivery of the services that people need. But we've done that through jointly funding a cultural competency position that supports Partners for Children and Families, goes out, has trainings, links with other resources to provide services to local communities. So, again, those local communities can support whatever culture, whatever it is they have in their particular community, whether it's race and ethnicity, whether it's economics, et cetera. And then and you'll see in our budget and have seen that we are asking for community schools coordinator that will be supported by five different agencies. We at the State Commission level support local commissions to help build their capacity. And I might say that's not just us in the commission system. We believe those agencies that work with Partners for Children and Families, our role, in fact, is to support building the capacity at the local level. So we at the state need to act as that support so that whatever they do on the ground is done well, and we want to remove the barriers to them getting the job done. We assure quality. Someone has to be responsible to maintaining on a statewide basis those quality standards. Again, to make sure that the taxpayers are getting what they have asked for in terms of programs that work. And then we serve as a clearinghouse for information. We have a very large resource bank of research and best practices. Everything is on our web. We help other agencies, other people. The local commissions use that information. Again, when they are designing programs or funding programs at the local level that are based upon research-based practice. We have assured, or we are in the process of assuring, that Healthy Start is evidence-based. And that's the credentialing process that some of you have heard about. And, of course, we have reduced funding.
Do you want to respond or mention the Washington State research that was done and whether or not that supports the the evidence-based requirement?
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, we do have a question and answer piece on that for you, and we will bring it back to you tomorrow morning. that talks exactly about that Washington Policy Institute study and what it says about that. Healthy Families America, which is in fact the Healthy Start model that we are using, and that's the reason why we are moving to credentialing, is a research-based practice program. So we will give you our response to that. I'm not going to go through the highlights of the system accomplishments. And then we go to budget detail. I'm not sure, do you want me to continue with that, to go through those funds? What would you like to do?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Monson.
The highlight, the accomplishments are appear to be all focused on what the counties have done. That's what's critical. Mm-hmm. And the one accomplishment it appears that the state commission has done is it has leveraged some money. Am I reading this accomplishments? And it'd be nice to know how the state commission was needed, or how it.
What is the connection between what the state has done with the successes that have been reached on the local level?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Richardson and Senator Moss Anderson, there is a blue sheet in your packet that talks about what we do. And what we do at the state level supports everything that is done at the local level. In many ways, we mirror at the state level, working with state agencies and developing public-private partnerships with local commissions do at the local level. And if you want to go through, and it talks about, it says, here are some examples of what we do.
Maybe the question is, it's kind of focused, actually, and that is, if the program was moved into DHS and had management there but still had the same key people at the local level, would they not be able to accomplish the same outcomes? And so maybe you could just address what the state commission is doing that is unique to what the state commission only could do.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee. The state commission and the local, it's hard to talk about them individually because they are so interconnected. The main thing in 1993 was that the commission system was created outside of the human service system. Why? Because we weren't as much about delivering services, but about mobilizing, engaging communities so they locally could support and get those services on the ground to their kids and their families. The Department of Human Services role is to provide services and to provide services to the most vulnerable children. The differences is that they are about high-end services. We're not. They are an agency that's already overstressed in terms of trying to carry out their mission and mandate. We are a small agency. We're a small agency on purpose. There is a reason why people many times come to our agency to look at something and maybe to do it, because we have the ability, the adaptability, the flexibility. We call ourselves in many ways nimble to get something done and get it done in a short period of time. Our role and function is very different from the Department of Human Services. If we were to go away today, my sense is the next thing that would happen is that local commissions would go away. Because remember when I said to you earlier about who we are in terms of being the insulator for the local people around keeping money in prevention? That is not what Department of Human Services is about for the most part. Doesn't mean that they don't have some prevention programs. But everything we do has a focus on prevention, the front end of a system, all along the continuum. Department of Human Services is an agency that does absolutely yeoman women's work. Our role at the in the commission system is to support them in doing the work that they do. Our role is to engage the community to leverage those resources so that we have services for kids and their families, so that they aren't abused, they don't get in foster care, they don't have to have alcohol and drug treatment. They don't have to have mental health services. So it's a very different role and meant to be outside of the human service system.
Senator Mossack?
Yes. What do, and it's too bad certain counties won't come to the table to talk, but what about the couple of counties, and there may be more, but I've only heard from a couple, that ever say they would prefer to have the block grant money come directly to them rather than through the state commission, because they would end up having more money through a block grant and be able to actually expand the level of services along the same mission that we want in prevention. So it'd be just nice to get a survey of every single county to say, would you rather have more money at the local commission, or do you absolutely need that direction from the state commission?
That's kind of a complex question, because there's an assumption there that the counties, if they had the money, would use it wisely and not use it to build something else. And some certainly would, but historically some aren't. But would you go ahead and address the question as to the, generally speaking, could counties receive substantially more funding if it went directly, if we went, if we just bypassed the state commission?
Sorry, Mickey.
Chair Richardson, Senator Manas Anderson, trying to ask that question. My sense is, we spend about $2.9-3 million at the state level, 5%. Somebody is going to have to be accountable for the local dollars. Somebody is going to have to do that. I would tell you that the counties that feel that way are very much in the minority. In fact, the local coalition of commissions on children and families are meeting today, and they are going to look at that issue again because they believe they already get a block grant. The only thing that's not block granted is Healthy Start, relief nurseries, and court-appointed special advocates. Everything else is block granted along the continuum. Each one of those funding streams has some parameter, but they also have a lot of flexibility locally. And I will assure you, maybe I should put a qualifier on that, but that, in fact, most counties believe they already have a block grant. There's very few. And the amount of money that the state commission now spends on doing all that support work is going to have to be spent somewhere.
I understand that tomorrow we'll hear from some counties and we can get some input from them during public testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Does that answer your question at all?
Oh, yes. It's giving me some
Representative
Hanson. Space here.
Well, as part of this discussion, I'd like to hear before we have to finalize any decision, what would the model be that DHS would use, and how expensive would it be? I mean, there's accounting functions, there's coordinating functions, there's collection of data. These are things that we need to have continue. Obviously, the accounting functions and some of the very very governmental type things that we do out of just basic fiduciary responsibility have to occur. Also, if we're having results-based and evidence-based programs, the collection of that evidence and how that's correlated has to occur. So I would like to see what the model would be for DHS, because I'm not terribly impressed with their track record in terms of both government efficiencies and their record in community development.
Let me spend just 20 seconds for those that are not familiar most of you are, but some may not be, in what's really going on. We have two co-chairs, a co-chair for the Senate, co-chair for the House. The Senate co-chair is recommending that the State Commission on Children and Families be assimilated into DHS. Am I, basically, is that correct?
I'm not sure if that's quite correct.
Well, being defunded.
It's that the bulk of the money be transferred to local county level, keep some as savings. I mean, that's the real thrust of it. They didn't come up with a specific proposal, or as Representative Hansen,
DHS,
I think, correctly points out, a model for the coordination, gathering of data, benchmarks, and what's important for the counties, the local commissions. The function the State Commission provides is a state resource and asset for best practices and service delivery.
Okay.
There, Mr. Chair, and we need to flesh this out a little bit more, but it's my understanding, yeah, that there was no component of the local commission's reporting.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'd like to ask...
To a state level.
Ms. Baker, if you would just tell us what your understanding is as to what the conflict or what the different viewpoints are presently that will have to be fleshed out, because that helps direct the conversation, because we certainly do need, as Representative Hansen has said, to see what the consequences would likely be if course A were followed or course B.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding of the House co-chair budget is that it's the same as the governor's budget, so there's no additional reductions. There is no change in the structure. My understanding of the Senate co-chair budget is that there's a $22 million general fund reduction, the premise being that the functions generally move over to DHS and that there isn't a big administrative piece attached to that. There isn't, however, a definition, as Representative Hansen pointed out, of how exactly that would work, how much of that would be administrative savings, how much of that would be programmatic reductions. So it's still very much in a conceptual stage, is my understanding.
Okay, so I think that as a subcommittee wanting to benefit both co-chairs, it's our responsibility to flesh out both ways, and so that there's, you know, we can find out what some of the consequences would be, and what some of the unintended consequences might be, so that the co-chairs can then, with greater knowledge, make a final decision, which will help allow a budget to be united. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we go down this path, and I think it's incumbent upon us, I think it's our responsibility to explore these two various proposals. I think this is a legitimate question. I would just like to point out that in another area that is actually related to the Commission's function and impacts a great deal of what they do in the area of alcohol and drug funding, some line items that I think we egregiously underfund to the detriment of everyone. But in alcohol and drug funding, we have come up with a mishmash of funding through State Grant 60 and 66 that has resulted in the legislature's inability to benchmark, measure, and evaluate incomes. And that is one of the reasons that we have incredible disparity in funding. I mean, $17 per capita in some counties down to $3 in others, is that we can't figure out how to get our arms around and measure the effectiveness of some of the, even though they, granted, they are, we can't measure it. And so we're reluctant to make change in equitable funding stream, not to mention the underfunding. So if we don't have, you know, good controls mechanisms and measuring methodologies in place, I fear the commissions could go down the same path, and then you start to get individual counties and individual legislators coming in, hey, how about a little bit more in county A, B, or, you know, in my county for this program, we'll just put it through the commission's budget. And you start to get this very herky-jerky, mishmash, complex puzzle of funding that I think we may live to regret. Having said that, it's a legitimate question. I do think we need to vet this as much as possible.
Representative Henson.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. One other theme that I'd like to see develop through this discussion. We're looking at the major difference in the two chairs' approach is a $22 million reduction to a $9.2 million program, or to a $2.9 million program. If we're only talking about the difference in the administrative funding of the state commissions, that's just under a $3 million program. I'd also like to see what the reductions are at the county level from the other $19 million that goes away. That this is not, I don't think we want to characterize it as removing administration costs and then so we can increase block granting to counties, because I think we're talking about a pretty significant reduction in a lot of programs based on the dollars that'd be going to the counties, not just the administrative savings.
Okay, so what we're trying to get to is we do not want this to be an advocacy approach, but an informational approach. And so we're asking for at your best attempt at showing what would be the consequences. Okay, not to make it look bad, but just to show it, you know, because maybe there's wisdom in that. We are short some funds, and maybe there are some consolidations that could take place. We don't have enough information to know, and we'd like some help with that.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, one of the things that I might ask, and I don't know whether you would be willing to do this, but since we have many local commissions in town for the next 2 days, would it be possible for us as a system, because as I say, it's hard to separate us because the state commission does the same thing at the state level that local commissions do at the local level, could we together come back with a response to you, to the questions you've just asked, as a system?
I have no problem with that. Whatever would be a good way to do that. I'm not sure what that means to come back together, whether that means, you know, 48 people testifying saying we really need to keep it the same, or if it means that you'll join together, come up with the best ideas of what the consequences would be and so forth, and then come back with kind of a summary.
Chair Richardson, the latter is what we will do. Brilliant. That's what I'm suggesting.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I got to tell you, based on the information that we have seen from the co-chairs, especially the Senate co-chair's budget, and Ms. Baker's response, that I don't think there is a plan. Wait a minute. The deal is you cut $22 million out of the deal, but you don't have a plan. I think we're asking these folks to come up with a pretty difficult scenario when, if each of us here were setting with a plan A that is a Senate co-chair plan showing how they were going to cut the $22 million out of the plan, and plan B, which is the governor's budget, we'd have something to compare. But you're asking them to answer questions about a process for which there is no plan. I find that very difficult.
Okay. You know what we're seeing is, first of all, this also involves policy, not just ways and means, because of the outcome and the effect it will have on children and family and the ability of the shift to accomplish the mission. We're not real clear on what the shift would really mean. I think that we need some more direction from the co-chairs as to what the alternatives would be before you're going to realistically be able to answer questions. I mean, if we don't know how to actually ask the right question, it's going to be somewhat difficult for you to answer it. And so we will get further instruction and contact you directly, okay, on that.
Thank you,
Chair. So let's shift out of this mire and go on that.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Senator Winters.
As most of you know, Senator Winters has not been here behind this dais, but when I came in just a few minutes ago and I saw you on TV and I heard some of the conversation, and as most of you know, I'm a very strong supporter of the Commission on Children and Families. And one of the things that struck me as I heard this conversation, and I'm glad that you mentioned this, that this really is a policy discussion. Typically those of us down in budget don't get ourselves, you know, so embroiled in policy discussion unless we've got a bill or something out there that says that we're heading this direction as a state. So I'm glad that you reminded us that that really is where we are. The other thing, it's kind of interesting to me that Oregon, one of the rare states who love to periodically come up with a planning process and to implement a process. And it takes time when you're planning, and it takes time to finally come to the place where you're beginning to see results. And I just found it kind of interesting with all the discussion that we had that we're finally in a place in Oregon in dealing with the issue of families and children where we're beginning to see results. County by county, and we've struggled over the years when I sat here as budget chair of how much do we fund, how much do we invest in planning, how much do we put in program, how much and what are the performance outcomes. And to be quite honest, I wish the other agencies that are around here have to go through some of the processes that you've gone through, because you've led the way in planning, you've led the way in doing needs assessments, you've led the way in looking at outcomes, and you've done it with recognizing that each one of our 36 counties in the state of Oregon are different, and each one of them have different needs. I hope this body recognizes all of this as we look at this as a policy discussion, and then talk about where we put our resources. I hadn't planned to come and sit on this dais today, but I did hear your voices. And so I thought I need to come and put my little 2 cents worth in on behalf of kids and families in this state. Because I'd certainly hate to see us throw the baby out with the bathwater and start all over again in planning for needs of kids in this state. And I've had a discussion already with the good senator over on my side and said, sometimes it takes an independent source, not a part of an agency. And I have nothing against the Department of Human Services, but had they been doing the job of working for children and families in the past, we would not have had to create the Commission on Children and Families to begin with. I probably have more history in this building on dealing with the Department of Human Services and kids.
Okay, and wait, what? That's also a policy issue.
She's got an opinion.
But I think that... in the time remaining, I'd like to have us focus on Partners for Children and Families Early Childhood Team and the comparisons contrast that we discussed earlier.
Good. Thank you.
All right, moving ahead.
Quickly, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. Oregon has developed a system of early childhood supports, as you know. The common goal of these supports is to assure that Oregon's children arrive at the school door prepared for kindergarten, but more important, prepared for life. Early childhood services in Oregon are offered through a variety of specific programs with very different names. These programs offer distinct services geared to meet the varied needs of our young children and their families. And each one of these programs have program staff who have unique skills and training to deliver these distinct services at different times in a child's young life. I want to introduce for you today, next to me, Nancy Latini of the Oregon Department of Education, and she will introduce herself when she speaks. Catherine Bradley, the Administrator for the Office of Family Health in the Department of Human Services, and Dr. Bob Nickel with the Cocoon Program at Oregon Health Sciences University, and then Karen Van Tassel, who is the Healthy Start Coordinator for the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. And we are going to begin with Karen in terms of Healthy Start. Then Catherine Bradley is going to talk about Babies First. Dr. Nickel is going to talk about Cocoon. And then Nancy Latini is going to talk about Head Start, Even Start, and Early Intervention. Correct, Nancy? And hopefully by the end of this presentation, you will have a much better sense of what each of these particular programs do and how they work together to not duplicate services. Thank you.
Welcome.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, again, I'm Karen Van Tassel, Healthy Start Coordinator with the Commission on Children and Families. And today, I'm just very gratified to be sitting here among my colleagues in the Department of Education and the Department Office of Family Health in the Department of Human Services, and with Dr. Nickel of Oregon's Health Sciences University, because I believe this is a visual representation of the progress that has been made over the past years in bringing these agencies together and creating a seamless network of supports and services for young children and their families throughout Oregon. Each of us does a service in a little bit different way with a different target population and serves unique needs within our community. We have, as Mickey Lansing said, developed a memoranda of understanding with the Office of Family Health and with the Cocoon Program recently. We also are working more closely with the Department of Education. We're learning from each other, and quite frankly, none of these programs are funded to the extent that there would be an opportunity for much duplication of services. In fact, we've been necessitated to find ways of working together and of triaging families, targeting the best services for the families so that we can do the best we can for these children and their families. Just beginning, you have a handout now at your desks that has on one side Healthy Start, Babies First, and Cocoon. And on the other side, if you flip it over, you have the programs of the Department of Education. So I'll begin by telling you just a little bit more about Healthy Start in a focused way so you can see its interrelationships with these other programs and its unique niche in the system as well.
I just need to let you know there's 20 minutes left in this entire time, so.
Okie dokie. Healthy Start, again, is primarily a program that addresses social risk factors, the population, first births, prenatal to preschool, and working with children to help break the cycle of abuse and neglect that can persist through generations so that it isn't carried forward from one more generation, and working to make a situation where children can be safe, healthy, and able to develop optimally, so that they can enter school ready to learn. Ways that Healthy Start coordinates with its partners here at this table and others throughout the early childhood system are through, of course, referrals, through decision-making at the outset about which services would best be suited to a family, and through doing things like regular ongoing developmental screening of all Healthy Start children and then referring those with identified delays to early intervention so they can get the earliest services possible, and working with our partners in public health as well to make sure that children are linked with the medical community and receive well child care, immunizations, and basic education around health and safety. And now I'll turn it over to Catherine Bradley from the Office of Family Health, who can tell you about Babies First and Cocoon.
Chair Richardson and committee, for the record, my name is Catherine Bradley, and I'm the administrator of the Office of Family Health. Thank you very much. We really believe this partnership is critical at both the state and county level in terms of really trying to sort of integrate our services for what is a very high-risk population. I thought what I'd do is maybe bring to light a couple of key components using Union County as an example, because they really are in a very unique situation right now. With, if you ask them, the public health department, what their primary challenges in that county is hunger and poverty. The goal of Babies First is to prevent poor health and developmental outcomes, and since 1990, it has been targeting high-risk infants. So our orientation is driven through the public health department with public health nurses that are delivering our services. A nurse visits a family home and may doing health screenings as well as interconnecting them with the rest of the public health services at birth and at regular intervals until about 36 months. If we look at Union County as an example, Union County got 590 referrals in their calendar year of July 03 through June of 04. Those referrals were predominantly from hospitals, WIC, and from OHSU, where high-risk mothers and infants would end up going. So again, it's a health referral screening population that comes back into the county health department. A total of 192 clients were seen. Not all clients are seen that are considered to be appropriate for the Babies First program. Again, they're high risk. So if they don't fit into our risk category, the referrals would be made to the county public health nurse, who actually may be that same individual, but will be funded with different dollars and will be considered in that way. Medicaid, 93% of these clients were on Medicaid, and the average visit was about an hour. And in that county, the average family received about 8 visits under the Babies First dollars. So what you can see is that it's a significantly risky population that these parents and these children are being seen for and evaluated. They are having some of the same health screenings in terms of immunizations and some of the growth and development, but from a professional perspective, there's more in-depth evaluation of motor, hearing, visual, and other integration of case management services. In fact, 91% of the clients in Union County were already hooked into the case management structure of the county. There were over, sorry.
Interrupt with, you said 93% of the cases are Medicaid. Are those, does Medicaid reimburse for those 8 visits?
The advantage of Babies First is that we actually have that hook in through what's called targeted case management dollars at the county level, so that the county actually can then not only get reimbursement from Medicaid, but we've got a leveraging system that's hooked in for federal and county funds for a reimbursement package.
Thank you.
And then for referrals out of the program, technically for Babies First, because we track all of that, it's interesting if you think about the referrals that we had. Not only did we have a significant amount of referrals to Healthy Start, but we also had them to housing, WIC, immunization, the primary care provider, who's either the physician or the nurse practitioner, and employment. So again, you see it's an integration of both health as well as social risk factors. The primary risk factors out of this group last year, 57% of them were parents with a disability or in a low-income poverty status. So again, for Union County, 57% of these were at risk on the basis, really, of poverty.
Wouldn't that be expected? Because people that are... Mm-hmm. High income would not normally be.
It would be expected, but I just think it's an important recognition. If we look at Washington County, one of their primary risk factors actually are premature births. So they have a different way that they package and catalog their services. But this was just an example for Union County and their catchment. So that was just a brief picture of some of the what we deal with Babies First. And I'll turn this over to Dr. Nichols with Cocoon.
Hi, good morning. I'm Dr. Bob Nickel. I'm a developmental pediatrician and professor of pediatrics at Oregon Health and Science University. I direct the Office for Children with Special Healthcare Needs. The Cocoon program is one of the programs we run in that office. And basically, we contract with county health departments over $1 million a year to provide services through a public health nurse for the Cocoon program. And as Catherine said, oftentimes these nurses are the same nurses who may be, as another part of their job, doing the Babies First program. In fact, we encourage counties to maximize the dollars they receive from these two sources to the risk benefits. My program and the programs you're going to hear about from Nancy are really about kids who have identified problems. The Cocoon program serves children with identified, oftentimes complex, and ongoing chronic health problems. So these would be developmental disabilities or chronic health conditions. And examples of that would be children with cerebral palsy, children with cleft lip and palate, children with spina bifida. The types of services the Cocoon program provides can vary from some direct educational support to family. For example, how do you feed your new infant with cleft lip and palate? Catheterization issues with kids with spina bifida, so some technical health issues, gastrostomy feedings with kids with cerebral palsy. But they also, and perhaps most importantly, provide direct supports to families in how do you coordinate the care, oftentimes complex, from providers in the local community to, you know, specialists at regional centers. How do you get there and coordinate all that care and integrate the recommendations for your care plan at home? We get, in the Cocoon program, a number of referrals from Healthy Start, Babies First, because as you heard, these are the programs that are identified for kids at risk. So if there are a kid that's identified with a definite problem, they may come to us if it's a significant health issue that we can assist with. We also make a lot of referrals to Nancy's programs, to early intervention in particular, because many of the children we serve for their complex health needs also have very significant educational needs, early intervention needs. So I can provide more information later based on questions, but hopefully that gives you kind of an overall picture of how the Cocoon program fits in. And I think just one last comment in terms of where it's administered as part of the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center at OHSU. We are perhaps unique in this country as a center that includes a public health entity, research and training, as well as especially clinical programs, all of which fit together to really maximize both training services as well as direct access to specialists, to our Cocoon nurses at local counties and vice versa. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Latini. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships at the Department of Education. Chair Richardson, members of the committee, I wanted to share with you that the Department of Education operates three early learner programs for Oregon's youngest children and their families. Oregon Head Start Pre-Kindergarten Program blends state and federal funds to offer preschool instruction for young children and family support to Oregon's poorest and highest need families, 3 and 4 year olds at the most. The Early Childhood Special Education Program is a program that serves young children birth through kindergarten age with significant disabilities and their families. These programs are required by federal law, and they are run and operate from a blend, again, of federal and state funds. Even Start is a federally funded small program that attends to poor families and children birth through five, and they look at and support adult literacy, parenting skills, and child development. All of these programs exist based on the knowledge that early learning assists poor children and disabled children to get ready, be ready prepared for school. It's also known that including the family in all of these efforts makes for a stronger community and also increases parent involvement as the child grows. All of our programs, as you've heard from the other people that spoke this morning, depend on these programs for referrals. For parents that have not engaged in the education process yet, if they find kids with significant disabilities or poor families who might benefit from something like Even Start, we depend on referrals from them. And at the same time, we depend heavily on them as we might do a vision screening or a hearing screening to refer to the right agency to get that family into the supports that they need. At the local level, we're assured that most of our contracts for special education, for example, are run through ESDs, and we assure that those people meet with the other agencies to assure that families are getting the services that they need, and then we're not just sitting back and looking at instruction in isolation. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? That was a mouthful.
Well, one piece of information, and again, this kind of goes back to our struggle in terms of trying to make decisions without seeing specific plans. But looking on the Oregon Department of Education programs, early intervention, Even Start, and the federal Head Start, all of these have an element of federal funds,
that look to me to be required. I'm also thinking in terms of special need children through in either Cocoon or that I believe there are federal requirements in terms of who we are required to provide services for. So the discretion of funding, I think, is which dollars in these programs would we actually have discretionary spending over would be interesting. And then how that fits to an overall budget of Children and Families Commission. When, if we're talking about reducing programs, but both in terms of maintenance of effort and specific program requirements, what programs would we still be mandated to provide?
Representative Richardson, Representative Hansen, for the Education Department, we could put a chart together for you so you can see specifically which have requirements and which don't, and where we could leverage. I get that to you this afternoon. All right.
Would you tell me the difference between the, you know, the parameters and job mission and the so forth on Even Start and Early Head Start?
Chair Richardson, Early Head Start is for children birth to two, and Head Start, for example, is 3 to 4. And our program for Oregon pre-kindergarten deals with the 3 to 4 year olds. The difference in the funding is that federal Head Start, both in the Early Head Start and the 3 to 4 year old Head Start, the federal funds go directly to the agency who has the programs. It doesn't come to the Department of Education like other federal funds do. The state funds then for the 3 to 4 year old program in Oregon for Oregon pre-kindergarten leverages against the federal funds so that we can get like the teacher training, the monitoring, and some of the other benefits that the federal program offers. We can get that without having to pay for that. So we can use our state funds directly for children.
Okay. As I look at this prepared sheet, and by the way, appreciate the time and effort that went into this, it says that under Even Start, the population is from birth to age 5 and their families. And my understanding, you said Early Head Start is 0 to 2, and the regular Head Start is 3 to 4, and so that seems to me like that is 0 to 5. And both are designed to help prepare for literacy and prepare, you know, preparation for children to be ready to go to school. So help me understand not just the flow, because I think what you're saying is that the money is different, but is not the goal basically the same?
Chair Richardson, the goal essentially is the same. The parents, I don't understand that. The parents that are in Even Start oftentimes have their children on a wait list for Head Start. The program for Even Start, if you've ever watched the federal funds in the last couple of years, has always been zeroed out and come back in again, with some of the intention at the federal level of putting it toward a Head Start or an early literacy program. So I think a lot of people have the same question you do, but we see the benefits as it's some of the direct service to parents as they're raising their children in a different, because of the partnerships they have with the higher education and with some of the other GED programs and other programs to help parents also get through a system more so focused that way than the Head Start program would be.
Let me just say that what we're faced with as a committee is a very difficult situation in that we have a limited amount of funds, and every one of these programs has tremendous amounts of following and a huge constituency. And I've asked and received the federal forms for two counties' Head Start programs, you know, the one that they send, which gives detailed information. And I took the number of children and divided it into the total amount of funding. And in one county, it was about $9,500 per child per, I believe that was year. And the other, it was under $9,000, but, you know, it was pushing $9,000 per child. And I, you know, I don't know where we stand on all of these programs because I haven't gone back to do that, but it's a huge amount of resources that are being spent. And is the intention good? Absolutely. You know, if we help one child, it's worth it. Well, of course it's worth it to that one child and to the parents, but when you're talking about having a limited amount of resources, they have to be allocated in a way
that is justifiable to the people. And so that is the difficulty that we're confronted with. Of course, we also know that getting rid of a program after it's in place is also next to impossible. But, and that's, of course, not our goal, to get rid of anything. The goal is to utilize the funds in the way to get the most impact on the children and the families. And we still haven't got that resolved yet, but the more information we get, the more it helps. And we appreciate what you provided for us today. Are there any questions you have on what's been presented today so far? Final thoughts or remarks? Yes, ma'am.
Chair Richardson and committee, we'll do the same thing for Babies First that you asked for in terms of providing information about the funding stream from the state, its linkage to federal dollars, and how that translates out.
Okay, that would be very much appreciated. Thank you, and thank you for coming forward today. We have only a couple minutes left. I would like to invite Rob Grunwald, if he would be able to come forward. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Richardson and members of the committee. I'm Rob.
We're decreasing in numbers, but we are focused.
It's still a plural. I'm Rob Grunwald. I am an economic analyst from the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, and I'm here to comment on the hearing looking at early childhood development, which is kind of odd to have somebody from the Federal Reserve here talking about very young children. But in our analysis that we've conducted, myself and Art Rolnick, who's the director of research at the Minneapolis Fed, released a paper 2 years ago called Early Childhood Development, Economic Development with a High Public Return. This is on our website at minneapolisfed.org. And our findings of this study show that what we think of traditionally as economic development, which would be the use of public resources to lure companies to a state or to a local area, at the end of the day, from a national perspective, we see jobs being really relocated from one state to another, one local jurisdiction to another. No new jobs are gained. And so we've argued in this paper that an expenditure in early childhood development would effectively shift the quality of the workforce long-term, which economists have shown correlates well with economic development. In fact, those states in the United States that have a higher percent of population with a college degree and high school degree have tend to have growing economies as well. But in particular, that research that's conducted on early childhood development shows that based on brain research, the fact that the child's brain is essentially formed by the age of 3 or 4, about 85% or so, and also long-term studies that show that children who are at risk, if they receive a high-quality intervention, such as a preschool program that includes parent education, that these long-term studies, including the Perry Preschool Program, the Abbasidarian Program in North Carolina, and the Chicago Child Parent Study Program in Chicago, show that you can save a lot of money in your school system to reduce special education costs and grade retention. Also, there's savings and reductions in crime. And these participants in these programs were more likely to go on and earn more money in the workforce, therefore increasing public revenue. So the benefits of these early interventions, while there are certainly private benefits, most of them come back to the public. And in conducting cost-benefit analyses on these programs, we see that on an annual rate of return basis, they return somewhere between 7% a year and 18% a year over the lifespan of that child. So for 62 years, you're looking at an annual rate of return of about 6 to 17%, which is very high. This is where venture capitalists get kind of excited when they hear rates of return that are that high.
Invest in kids.
That's right. And I'll conclude by saying that it is important from these research studies that the programs have high quality. And so looking at dollar figures and Chairman Richardson's mention of the $9,000 per child, looking at kids who are at risk, this would be about a fair amount of resources to spend on these kids, with in mind that in the long term, you're going to be saving your budget a tremendous amount of money later on. And with that, I'll be open to answer any quick questions that you have.
Questions? We want you to know that we have no misconception about the value. The dilemma that we're confronted with is the direction. In other words, if you've got multiple opportunities to direct funds at this population, then where do you spend the money? Do you spend $9,500, or if you can accomplish similar goals for a lesser amount, do that? So it's not about, is it justified? The intentions certainly are. It's about the efficiency and effectiveness of multiple consumers of the available resources. Thank you so much for the resource that you've provided and the work that you've done, and for taking the time to come to us.
Actually, it's not ironic that we would think of a banker and the banking people in terms of looking at this type of investment. I think when I got my first home mortgage, my my firstborn was put up as security for the... or at least it seemed like it at the time.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you coming.
Mr. Chair, I would point out in the packet of handouts that you got, there is a it's a December 2003 supplement that addresses this issue that was prepared by the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, and some other information on early childhood issues. And then I would just note that tomorrow we're scheduled for public testimony in the subcommittee on the Commission on Children and Families Budget.
All right. We look forward to meeting with those of you that will be back tomorrow and all the others. Appreciate your attention and the excellent information that's been provided. Without objection, we'll be adjourned.